Conversation with Robbie Robertson of the band today in front of an audience at the annual non-convention of public radio music people. Robbie Robertson was the main songwriter for the band throughout their career. He started playing with Levon Helm, Rick Danko, Richard Manuel, and Garth Hudson as the Hawks in 1958, backing R&B and rockabilly singer Ronnie Hawkins. The group ended up backing Bob Dylan on his legendary 1965-66 tour. Afterwards, they became the band, recording their classic debut, Big Pink. The band dissolved on Thanksgiving Day 1976, following an all-star concert documented by director Martin Scorsese in the film The Last Waltz. Robbie's new solo album is called How to Become Clairvoyant. Let's start off with a bit of the song that begins the album, Straight Down the Line.
From the Jetland Circuit to the Peppermint Lounge, been run off more than once for going underground, where I met an old with a walking cane. He wore a striped suit and used someone else's name. He said, son, I've seen it all, and it's not what you think. Mm-mm. He said there's some tough choices to be made. Then he took a little drink, and I heard him say, and I heard him say, I do not play no rock and roll. Would not be moved to sell my soul. The demons are out to me. Rock and sin. Oh, the demons are out to me. Oh, you sin. Straight down the line.
The first song on here, Straight Down the Line, talks a lot about, seems to be, it talks about touring of the South and a lot of the musicians you ran into. The line, I do not play no rock and roll in there. I know from Mississippi Fred McDowell, but you say you first heard it from...
I first heard it, Sonny Boy Williamson said that to me when we were hanging out with him in Helena, Arkansas. And we went to find him in Helena. We went down to what they called the Hauler there, and we actually drove down there and said to somebody on the street, you know where we could find Sonny Boy Williamson? And they said, yeah, right there. And he was like walking down the street, and he had this suit on, this amazing looking suit that he'd brought back from England, and a bowler hat, and a brief, and this kind of Fu Manchu mustache and goatee, and this briefcase with his harmonicas and a little microphone in it. And he's walking down the street, and it was a vision to behold. You know, just like, look at there, there's Sonny Boy Williamson walking down the street. So anyway, when we hooked up with him, we said, hey, you know, I know you don't know us and everything, but we admire your music and blah, blah, blah. We play music and all this stuff. And he said, okay, we're going to go over to this place here. And we went across the street there to this woman's place where it was just like a big living room. And she served a moonshine and, you know, like corn liquor. And he was like giving her signals that we didn't know what it meant, but there was like a round of drinks of this stuff, and the top of your head would literally lift off when you would take, it was like, what is that? It was like, whoa. So anyway, we were hanging out there and talking and catching up on things, and this is when, well, there was two, you know, segments to this, but this was when he said to us, I just got back from England. I was over there, and I was playing with a bunch of those English guys, and they want to play the blues so bad, but unfortunately, that's how they play it. And we're like, whoa, okay. And then in the conversation, as it went on, he declared himself. He said, I am a blues man. And he was saying this in response to, because he was commenting that in England, that what they were playing was rock and roll. And he was saying, I'm a blues man, and I do not play no rock and roll. And it just sent shivers down me when I heard him say that. And then the other things in there come from Mahalia Jackson. One time also said, I do not play no rock and roll. And the other person I'm referring to is Frank Sinatra, who said, yeah, this music will be around for 6 months and it'll be gone, right? So, but I love the idea that they were so bold to stand up and say, I do not play no rock and roll. And for somebody like me who, that's all I've done all my life, I thought it would be good coming from me to, you know, make praise to them.
Well, now when you were, you and the Hawks were touring with Ronnie Hawkins, you played rock and roll, but you kind of played R&B-ish rock and roll. And did you play exclusively for white audiences in the South, or did you ever get gigs at black clubs?
We didn't play at black clubs, but there were places that we played where there was black people there as well. Some of them were only white people in the South. And then there was places that they just felt that they were just a little bit more advanced or something, and there would be integrated audiences. And I would go sometimes to clubs to hear other people play, to hear Howlin' Wolf and Little Junior Parker. And it was interesting because white people could go to those clubs, but black people could not come to the other clubs, right? And I was just grateful that there was a way to hear this music up close, because it was, and this was like in the early 60s. So this was at a time before the word on these people had spread so vastly that everybody was inspired by them. People were just learning about this music then. And I was fortunate enough as a young kid, as 16 and 17 years old, that I was there in the front row checking it out, stealing all those licks.
Well, I'm going down the roses, stopping Fannie Mae. Gonna tell Fannie what I heard. A boyfriend said, don't start me talking. I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up this signifying. 'Cause somebody's got to go. Jack give his wife $2, go downtown and get some mocking. Gets out on the streets. Old George stopped her. He knocked her down and black in the eye. She gets back home, tell her husband a lie. Don't start me talking, I'll tell everything I know. I'm gonna break up this signal fine. Somebody's got to go.
Robbie Robertson is our guest, and in the Pennybacker film of the tour that the Hawks did, which was one that didn't run on ABC, but was made for it. This is the one where there was some booing, et cetera. I want to know what your reaction was when people reacted that way when you were touring with Bob.
Well, the idea at that time in hooking up with this guy who was a folk singer, and now he's going electric. We'd only ever been electric. We didn't know a lot about folk music. So when it was like, oh, he wants you to come and play with him, and I was kind of like, I don't know, does he know anything about this music of, you know, I know he knows he's very good at folk music. Does he know about this? There was a lot of questions. And Bob was, like, yeah, I know about this, and I did this, and I did that, and everything. And it was, and I learned quickly that he didn't. And it took a while to actually, get it to a place where I felt like, okay, now we're making some music here. And in the beginning, it was just kind of scrambling along behind him while he was trying to sing these songs. And
He had a weird sense of time, did he not? I mean, he was.
Well, yeah, I mean, but it was time. He didn't know when you come in and when you. But it, you know, but it was it was what you do when you just play on your own. People that do that can come in whenever they want. Nobody has to know when. You can end whenever you want, all of those kind of things. But when you're playing with a band, we all got to know where we start and where we stop to some degree. And everybody's game for, you know, some, you know, improvising or whatever, of course. But we want to be able to play together. That's the trick in playing in a band, in playing in a real band. So anyway, it took some time, but while we were learning how to do this, people were not appreciating us learning in front of them. And then we realized, oh, by then, they didn't care whether we learned or not. It was a ritual that they would come to these shows and they would boo us everywhere we played around the world. And I thought, what a strange way to make a buck.
I don't believe you. Liar.
A great learning experience. I mean, learning about, you know, people, not just about the music, but just about the reaction, to see how angry and how violent people would be about this music. It was not funny then. And like I was saying, as we finally got better at doing this, it didn't change. It didn't matter. And there was a certain point in there when I said, you know what? They're wrong, and we're right. And it was a very, at this time, in 1966, that was a very bold thing to think. And Bob, bless his heart, he didn't flinch. He just, you know, stood his ground. And then I said, oh, yeah, all right, well, we will too. We were like gunfighters out there for a duel, but we were dueling in a musical revolution. And you don't know it at the time, but as it turned out, we were right and they were wrong. And they did come around in time. And that was like, wow, that's an interesting experiment in terror.
Robbie Robertson is our guest, and he's got a wonderful new album called How to Become Clairvoyant. And the answer I can glean from this album is kind of by looking back to look forward. It seems that way. Is that sort of the answer?
Well, it is that. It's a bunch of those things. That one of the things, too, that you could note is it's really a reflection on I wish I knew then what I know now. That's another way of saying that. And there was also a part of this record that I've never had this experience before. But after I went to London and, Eric Clapton had invited me over there and said, let's go in the studio and see what happens. And that was just right for me. Rather than saying, okay, here's what we're gonna do and here's how long we have to do it. And there was no rules. Let's see what happens, because we didn't know whether we were making an Eric Clapton record or a duet record or a Robbie record. We just didn't know yet. And that was good. And so when I went over there, I thought, we may never ever get to do something like this again. So I want to have some ammunition. I want to have some ideas. And the ideas, some of them I wrote on the keyboard or on the piano. So he said, well, let's see if Winwood's in town. And I've known Steve Winwood longer than I've known Eric. So I said, oh, that would be great. So Steve came in. When we were recording, it felt like we'd been doing this together for years. There was something in our musical connection that allowed us to jump right to the front of the line and get down to business. And we just had the greatest spirit feeling in the studio. And so anyway, after we did that, Eric was the one who said, it's very clear to me now that this is your record. You've written most of the songs. The direction of it is all your ideas. And I am very happy to be supportive, and I'll sing, play, whatever you want me to do on this. Because he was really happy with the way that it was turning out. So the clairvoyant part of it was, after I did that, as soon as I came back from England to Los Angeles, I had to immediately work on the music for Martin Scorsese's new movie, Shutter Island. So when I was done with that, it was like, oh, I got to get back to working on the record now. And when I came back to it, there was something about that departure that gave me a clear vision, hence clairvoyant, of who I wanted to work with, how I wanted to finish up these songs, the ideas, everything.
Now, what about the decision to lyrically write more about yourself, be more personal on this?
You know, I was not thinking about that. There was no intention to that. And one of the great things about songwriting over the years is you start writing something and you don't know where it's going. You don't know what this means yet. And you're following the path and you see where it leads you. And that's the way in the songs that I've written for this, in songs that I've written in the past, 90% of the time, some words would come and I didn't know what it was going to mean or where we were going. And as I went along, it started to reveal itself to me. And the more it revealed, the more I realized, wow, I'm writing about something that I don't write about. I don't do this. And it felt good. And it felt refreshing to me. And actually, when I was finished writing some of these songs, it even felt like somewhat of a release in a way.
Walking out on a voice was never the plan. We drifted off course, couldn't strike up the band. We'd been working the graveyard shift, now wonder do you catch my drift? This was trouble in the making, but
but it's a risk well worth taking. So just pull over to the side of the road. This is where I get off. This is where I move on.
Robbie Robertson is our guest, and he's got a wonderful new album called How to Become Clairvoyant. I think one of the songs that I'm sure everybody who talks to you wants to talk about is This Is Where I Get Off, which is, for the first time you in song, you talk about the end of the band and what happened after the last waltz, in which you propose that the idea wasn't necessarily to break up the band. The idea was to take a break.
Yeah, there was nobody ever said, I'm quitting the band, or let's break up the band. This talk never, ever happened. And when we did The Last Waltz, it was misunderstood to some degree. What we were trying to do was close that chapter. We've been doing this together for 16 years, and we had been on the road, like, you know, seriously on the road. We played, as I say on the first song there, we got fired from the Peppermint Lounge. We'd been on the road, you know? And so anyway, we wanted to close the chapter on that. Everybody catch their breath, get their feet on the ground, feel somewhat refreshed, and help take care of one another a little bit too in that period. It was a crazy time. And then let's regroup and do what we love to do more than anything else, create some great music. And it had nothing to do with going out and playing and traveling around and stuff. It really had to do with focusing on the creative spirit of it. And so everybody said, that's such a good idea for, that's good medicine for what we need at this time. And we did that, and we did The Last Waltz, and then Rick wanted to make a record, and Levon was thinking about making a record, and Garth had some art project. Everybody had some other things that they were going to do, and I had some things, and we thought, that's great. We'll just get away from it. So when we come back, we're going to have a whole other appreciation for it, and we'll really get down to business. The problem was nobody came back. We went off and did these things, and it was like you had to just read the writing on the wall then. And what it was saying was the passion or something that makes you do something together in the strongest way you can was not there. And you had to acknowledge that, and things don't always stay the same.
Well, how did the narrative become? Because the narrative has become Robbie broke up the band. I mean, it's interesting that it.
Yeah. Well, I did read the writing on the wall, and I did say, listen, if nobody's into this, I had a very specific moment in that. We had some work to do. We had something that we needed to finish up in that period that we had all agreed on. And we had this studio in Malibu called Shangri-La. And there was one day that I went to the studio and I thought, well, I guess everybody's running late. You know, we've seen that before and everything. And sitting there and I'm listening to some ideas that we're working on and trying to put some thoughts together, and time's going on, and I'm thinking, wow, I wonder where everybody is. And as it turned out, nobody showed up. And there was something so, there was such a sadness inside of me that day, and I thought, I cannot make something happen that doesn't want to happen. And I have to figure out the alternative to this, because I don't know how to fix this.
Crazy Chester followed me, and he caught me in the fog. He said, I will fix your rack if you take Chester, I'm a peaceful man. He said, that's okay, won't you feed him whenever you can.
Hey, take a load off Fanny, take a load for free, take a load off Fanny.
Hey, you put your load right, on me.
Robbie Robertson is our guest, and now you're talking about doing a memoir, but what I heard was really interesting about it is you were going to talk about the characters that inhabit the songs of the band, and there's so many great characters in that. Were they majority of them real? Did you base them on?
Yeah, they're all based on somebody that I have observed, and I might have improvised on, you know, on that storytelling of those characters, because some of them I didn't know that closely, but I knew them enough to say, this is a character that I'll never forget, you know, and they did end up finding their way into those songs.
Crazy Chester?
Crazy Chester, there was a Crazy Chester, yeah, yeah.
Guess we gotta read the book.
Well, you definitely have to read the book. And Ronnie Hawkins, he knew Crazy Chester. I just stood back and watched on that one.
The song on here called When the Night Was Young is kind of looking back. It's a bit about idealism of folks in the 60s, which was kind of interesting because that was the time everybody was kind of getting psychedelic and being hippies, and you guys were sitting in a basement in Woodstock doing something completely different. And it's interesting, that look at it.
This period in that song that I'm reflecting on was when we left Ronnie Hawkins. It's when the Hawks went out on their own. And we were playing down south. We were playing the Chitlin circuit. But for some reason, when we were on our own, the characters at that time became more extreme and further out. And it was not only, it had a lot to do with just that period of time. There was a sense of an opening, and it was a sense of freedom that you could feel amongst people. These people that usually would be in a dark back room somewhere were out in the open now. I miss something now, because there was a unity. There was a togetherness in the youth of the country, in the youth of North America, and then in the youth that was spreading around the world. And in that unity, there was a conviction that we could make things better, that we could do something, that we could stop this war, that we could stand up and our voices would be heard. And because everybody came together in that, it really felt that way, and it was a very exciting feeling. And now I'm just saying I miss that now, because it really today feels very fragmented, and you know, you don't know what anybody thinks, and it's just kind of all over the place, and who cares anyway. And that, I don't think that that's as healthy as feeling that unity.
The sign reads, God bless America, and ammo. I'm not sure that's what it means. The sign reads, repent, the end is near. I'm not sure that's what we need. Get your heart beating in the right direction. That's when you make a real connection. We had dreams when the night was young. We were believers when the night was young. We could change the world, stop the war. Never seen nothing like this.
When the Night Was Young from Robbie Robertson, that is on his new album, How to Become Clairvoyant. And our thanks to Robbie for a very revealing conversation today. Great to hear from him.